Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Geek State. My name's Marika.
And my name is Kelly.
How are you doing, Kelly, on this fine morning?
I'm good. I am excited for this episode, if only because I feel like we've made a tradition out of it.
Yes, it was really fun to go back to a fandom, a genre, and see not only something new from that fandom, but also to see kind of how my perception of that genre has evolved over, God, 3 years already we've been doing this. It's always such a shock. But yeah, I was excited for that reason.
I mean, I guess if you saw the episode title, you know that we're about to dive into Kiki's Delivery Service. This is our third season covering a Studio Ghibli movie. Mm-hmm. I still don't know if it's Ghibli or Ghibli 3 years later.
It's like GIF or JIF. We'll never know. We'll never know. I've accepted that.
No one's corrected us.
No.
And I'm going to take that as a win.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, I've just heard both said so interchangeably, but also I think it's one of those things that I've always just read. Mm-hmm. I've rarely like spoken to someone about the studio itself. So, hey, who cares at the end of the day?
We actually almost didn't even include one this season when we did our initial outline. And I don't remember what we ended up replacing, but there was something that when we reviewed, we were both kind of a little like on the fence about whether we were interested in doing it. And that's when I was like, oh shit, we don't have the Ghibli movie.
We gotta do the Ghibli movie. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because our outline for the season process is very much like we throw everything at the wall and then we do like a first round of edits and then a second round of edits. And then there's that like third round where the recording date is slowly approaching and one of us just looks at the other like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do that. And so I think that's what happened here, fortunately, because yeah, it's a very, very different type of Studio Ghibli film from what we've covered in the past.
And if you've missed our previous ones, that would be Pompoko in season one and Grave of the Fireflies in season two. Drastically different tones from each other.
Go back and listen to Pompoko if you want just a great time, because it includes raccoon testicle magic. It needs to be watched. It needs to be listened to. And don't listen to Graveyard of the Fireflies, because it's clearly the most traumatic thing I've ever experienced. It's up there with just movies that have hurt my soul. And so we're going into thematically a very, very different geek today. But before we do that, Kelly, what's in your cup?
I'm just drinking peppermint today. Just peppermint tea from the Tea Practitioner. Because as much as Ghibli movies have become a tradition every season, I realized when I was doing the outline that both of our previous Studio Ghibli episodes, we drank teas from the Tea Practitioner.
Really?
So I was like, fuck it. Keep the tradition going. We're picking a tea from the Tea Practitioner today. This one is Ontario-grown peppermint.
Ooh.
It's really, really menthol-forward and crisp, which is, like, exactly what I want out of a peppermint tea.
Oh, interesting. I mean, first of all, very cool that you realized we'd done Tea Practitioner teas with Studio Ghibli before. That's, I feel like we're building our own canon, if you will. I really enjoy that. And a local or, you know, one province over grown peppermint. That's so cool. Herbs in Canada. Can I just tangent for a second?
Of course.
Herbs in Canada are so wildly underrated, because we grow some of the most amazing stuff when it comes to like rosemary, thyme, peppermint. And it's because of our atrocious winters that the herbs have to like fight for survival. And it gives like all the essential oils that much more potency when they're picked and everything. So when you said it was really menthol flavored, I wasn't surprised, because I feel like a lot of the times when you get like locally grown or like small batch grown herbs from countries like Greece or India or things like that, they have a slightly more earthy quality to them than they have an intense, you know, pepperminty. But those Canadian winters, man, they're really making our herbs pop.
Oh, it does pop. It's very, very, like, breathing in, or I guess drinking in, rather, just, like, straight essential oils.
It sounds delightful. It sounds very well paired with the conversation we're about to have. I am drinking a tea from the East Indies Tea Company called Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel.
Yeah, so, want to talk about why? Because that's a unique tea for this July 2nd hot afternoon.
Okay, absolutely. I wanted something whimsical. I wanted a tea that exuded whimsy. And so when you asked me what I wanted to drink today, I said something whimsical, something with marshmallows, because that's just the feeling that this geek has given me. And then you asked me, you know, caffeinated, uncaffeinated, and this was the first thing you showed me, not the first thing you pulled out. I did notice there were about maybe 10 teas that had been pulled out, and you're like, how about this one? And it's black with royal blue, white, and light blue sprinkles, marshmallows. I think it looks like it has gold flecks in it.
Yeah,
it
like gold sugar.
Yeah, gold sugar. It's on a black tea base. It is whimsical.
Taste-wise, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But even visually, it's got gold flecks and marshmallows.
I guess more what I'm saying is, like, arguably the name Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel is perhaps not the most whimsical name.
I mean, it is to me. I mean, just because, I mean, you know, Steve, my husband's Jewish, and so we celebrate Hanukkah. And dreidel, dreidel, dreidel is the thing I do with my kids. And so it is got that childlike quality to it. I mean, I associate it not with, you know, a long cultural history, as I think many people of that faith do. For me, it's really something that I do with my kids once a year during the holiday season. In the cup, it's kind of like a sugary cloud. It's, like I said, visually very, very playful. It does look, and look, this is not a slight on any blender at the East Indies Company. This is a compliment. It does look like what would happen if you got, like, an 8-year-old in a blending room and you said, make your tea. And they'd put marshmallows and sprinkles and gold flecks, you know? So yeah. It does have absolutely that, like, fun, playful, youthful, you know, I'm going to say the word whimsical again. Get ready. This is the podcast where I overuse that word. but it's pairing perfectly with what I needed right now in this moment.
That is fair. I do feel like I need to acknowledge that it's a very obviously Hanukkah blend that's not kosher.
I feel like only you would feel the need to point that out, but you're right. You're 1,000% right.
Just in case any of our Jewish listeners are like, oh boy, I just found the Hanukkah tea 2023. Look out. Technically, it's not kosher because the marshmallows contain gelatin.
It's an important thing to point out. You're absolutely right. Thank you for doing so. It's just really strange that that didn't, I guess, occur to them. Again, not a slight. Not a slight. Not everybody's aware, and not everyone's strictly kosher.
Also true.
So, you know, what a weird tangent this what's in your cup has taken. I mean, to be fair, I picked a very strange tea to do this with, but wow, didn't see that coming. Shall we discuss Kiki's delivery service?
Absolutely. Adapted from Eiko Kodono's 1985 novel of the same name, Kiki's Delivery Service was released in July of 1989 by the Toei Company and is a Japanese fantasy film animated by Studio Ghibli. The film was written, directed, and produced by Hayao Miyazaki, the co-founder of Studio Ghibli. An English dub was released by Takuma and Streamline Pictures in 1990. Counting Nausicaä Valley of the Wind, which was released just prior to the official founding of the studio, Kiki's Delivery Service was the 5th film to be released by Studio Ghibli. It was also the first film to be released under a 15-year distribution partnership with the Walt Disney Company, who produced their own English dub, which first appeared at the 1998 Seattle International Film Festival. The film follows the 13-year-old titular character Kiki, voiced by Manami Takayama in the original Japanese film and dubbed by Lisa Michelson and Kirsten Dunst in the 1990 and 1998 versions respectively, as she leaves home for the first time to begin her year-long training as a witch. She is joined by her talking black cat, Gigi. After settling in the port city of Corico, Kiki starts a delivery service utilizing her flying broomstick and meets several townsfolk, including an expecting mother named DeSono, who offers Kiki housing in exchange for assistance in her bakery, a somewhat awkward and nerdy boy named Tombo with a fascination for flying, and Ursula, a painter working through a long stretch of artist's block. Based on 42 critic reviews, Kiki's Delivery Service currently holds a 98 approval rating on review site Rotten Tomatoes and has been highly praised for its animation, pacing, the exploration of themes and concepts of maturity, vulnerability, and overcoming isolation. To date, Kiki's Delivery Service has won more than a dozen film awards and has grossed over $41 million worldwide.
Okay, so I've heard about this movie for years. It's in the list of Studio Ghibli movies you have to see, Spirited Away being, you know, the first one I was really aware of. And
My
then
Neighbor Totoro.
That's the other one, My Neighbor Totoro, which everyone and their mother has told me I have to see. And Kiki's Delivery Service comes up a lot. So expectations for me going into this movie were high, but also, based on our past experience, terrified, right? Just absolutely terrified. I was ready to be completely shocked or taken aback or destroyed emotionally. I think that was the thing. I was seeing, like, this young girl flying, and I was like, oh, no, like, her mom's gonna die, or her dog's gonna die, or, like, she's gonna be, you know, have to deal with, like, racism or bigotry, or some kind of raccoon bat is gonna try to suck her blood. You never know. You never know with Studio Ghibli where it's gonna land, right?
All very fair observations.
Right? If a raccoon bat just tried to steal her soul halfway through the movie, would you have been shocked?
Oh, of course not. I've seen Spirited Away. No Face basically is a black blob that does the same thing.
Excellent point. I completely forgot about that. But yeah, that's exactly what happens, right? So I really went into this with a certain amount of, like, apprehension. So I even put it on early in the morning because I like to watch things that could potentially make me scared or anxious early in the morning, so I forget them by the time I go to sleep and it doesn't keep me up.
Solid strategy.
Thank you. It usually works. So it was very early in the morning. It was about 7:30 or 8 in the morning when I started watching this. And about 20 minutes in, I realized, okay, I think I'm safe. I think I'm okay. A bunch of things could have happened at this point that would have been telltale signs that we're headed into, like, spooky territory or uncomfortable supernaturality or something to that effect. But it very kind of quickly became obvious that this was a coming-of-age story for a 13-year-old girl who happened to be a witch.
Yeah, I mean, I had a very vague idea of what the movie was about. I had watched... So I thought before I watched for the episode that I had seen it in its entirety.
Okay.
And I realized as I was watching that I had actually only seen, like, the first maybe third of the movie.
Okay.
But, like, a decade ago. Okay. Like, very, very... I think I was in elementary school. So I had this super, super vague idea of, like, it's a witch, and she's very young, and in this town, and she's got a talking cat, and, you know, I remembered the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
More than anything else, I remembered Asono's bakery. So I knew when I kind of, like, picked it, that it would be different than Grave of the Fireflies or Pompoko, which is what I wanted, because if we're gonna keep doing Studio Ghibli movies, I wanna, like, explore the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So my only goal when picking something was just pick something that's different in tone. And I felt confident this would be, and it's not one that I know super, super well, which I also don't want to do. I like the idea of us exploring a Ghibli movie kind of together for essentially the first time.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice.
It's nice.
It's just pleasant. I was not surprised that the tone was very, like, lighthearted and more whimsical. We're gonna say whimsical fucking lot, guys.
This is the whimsical episode of the season. By far. By far. Yeah.
Not surprising. The thing that did surprise me that I did not remember is that there's no villain in, like, the proper sense. Like, there's no character you can point to and be like, that's the bad guy.
Right, yeah. It's probably one of the softest coming-of-age stories I've ever seen, especially for a supernatural being who's not in a particularly supernatural world, right? Because, like, she's a witch, her mom's a witch, there are other witches. Witches seem to be more or less accepted, but there's no other werewolves, there's no magical impediment. I don't know. There's no Galactus, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, referring to, like, Fantastic Four. There's no other supernatural creatures out there. And like you said, there's no villain, but there's also kind of no real hardship. And not to say that, like, you know, people who try to like equate traumas or say like, oh, that's not really traumatic, this is really traumatic. I'm not trying to do that at all. But like, at no point in time does she go hungry. At no point in time does she become homeless. At no point in time is she beaten or treated in a harmful way, either physically or emotionally. She goes through the trials of a young 13-year-old who happens to be a witch, and that is in of itself its own form of growing up, growing pains, trauma to a certain extent. But yeah, there's no villain. There isn't even a contextual villain or a geographical villain or anything. It's just, that's how I kind of feel about this movie. It kind of just happens. things just kind of happen.
I think we kind of agree and disagree on several parts. We talked about it a little bit, like, off recording, but, like, to your point of, like, she doesn't go through hardship. She doesn't go through, like, extreme hardship.
No.
To all of you. You know, your list. I disagree, though, because I think that is the villain of the movie.
Oh.
In as much as you can say that there is a villain, it's the, like, silent and unseen hardships of just growing up and feeling alone. You know, right. The things that, like, you can't point to a character, but that you just experience within yourself, right? So we've absolutely talked about this on the podcast before, but we've both in different circumstances gone through the experience of moving to a totally new place and knowing zero people there and basically having to start over completely fresh. Different locations, you know, you in China and
you in French Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that I think puts us in a unique position where we should be able to, like, empathize to an extent with what Kiki is going through. But for her, it's even different because, like, she's starting fresh in that city. And so it's, like, that hardship. And she's fucking 13. Like, she's a tiny wee thing. And so she's, like, alone and feeling isolated. And, you know, in that kind of weird period of, like, you're no longer a child.
So, yeah, I can see loneliness as being a part of her experience, but to be honest, had you not brought loneliness up as a theme to me, like, off recording, it wouldn't have occurred to me. Because even the loneliness itself is so whimsical that, I mean, every single scene, shot, piece of dialogue, everything in this film is absolutely about delight and lightness and airiness and whimsy. And again, apologies for overusing this word, but it's like from the color tones, even in the most darkest of moments, you know, the rain has a magical sound.
I've said it before, I fucking love water in Studio Ghibli movies.
it's very impactful, you know. Even the crows at one point who kind of sort of attack her. They don't really even attack her. We've seen some pretty awful crow attacks in cinema history. This is not one of them, you know. So everything is kind of, I don't want to say pulled back, but definitely made for an audience that is much, much younger than I am.
Yes, for sure.
And I don't know that I was like, I'm at the right age to have watched this film. If I had seen it when I was 8 years old, I think the impact would have been much, much greater. And it's something that is really a movie that I think I want to show my kids, because it does talk about loneliness, and it doesn't have to be a giant monster or a huge villain or anything like that for you to feel lonely. You can be surrounded by a support group and still feel lonely. Like, she travels to this new town with her cat. She's immediately taken in by a very nice baker lady. Things are good, but even with that support group, she still feels lonely. So it's a good lesson, but honestly, it went right over my head when I watched it.
That's so interesting to me. The thing about, like, showing it to children is also really interesting, because I don't think, like, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, let's say, like, under the age of, like, I don't know, like, 14, 15, mm-hmm. I don't think they would pick up on, like, that, like, idea of loneliness at all. I think it goes fully over their head, and it's just, like, a fun, whimsical fucking movie.
Right.
I think the sweet spot is probably, maybe this is why it resonates a little more with me, I think, but like mid 20s, because she has a really great support network and a lot of friends she's made in the city. And for much of the movie, like, the majority of the movie, she is totally fine.
Yeah.
But there's a breaking point where she no longer is able to hear Gigi the cat speak.
Mm-hmm.
And at, like, when that happens, it's like a wall. Like, right. Just everything happens very, very quickly. She starts feeling very, very sad and unmotivated and doesn't want to spend time with her friends. She loses her ability to fly for the first time ever. She can't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when it was very obvious to me that the theme of the movie was isolation, loneliness, and also that this was a coming-of-age movie that was not anything like I'd seen, where it's very much a sadness brought by being in a new place and feeling isolated, and on top of that, this, like, the final straw being a recognition that you've lost something. So not only are you new, like, new in the sense of, like, new space, you know, not surrounded by family or, like, long-term friends, so, like, Gigi no longer being able to talk. Gigi is not a talking cat, right? Like
she speaks cat, is basically, witches speak cat, essentially.
No. So, the way it's kind of, like, implied is that Gigi has never been able to talk. No one else can hear Gigi, only Kiki.
Right.
And it's her as a child having this, like, imaginary friend to keep her company.
Oh.
And when she loses the ability to hear Gigi talk, which never comes back, even though her flight she's never able to hear Gigi again. It's this turning point of realizing that she's, like, no longer a child. Like, she is starting to mature, and that means losing your childhood. And so, like, it's that kind of loss and loneliness. And even when she eventually, with much of the help from Ursula, who is the painter, and they have, like, a really good talk about, you know, how, right, even if you have an inherent skill, which, you know, is art in Ursula's case, or painting, and flying in Kiki's case, it has to be nurtured and you have to have confidence in yourself. That's what, like, writer's block is, or artist's block. It's a loss of confidence or a hesitation to nurture a skill or a craft. And part of what they talk about is also, like, loneliness and isolation, and, you know, how not feeding the things that bring you passion can further push you into a place where you're unable to move forward. It's like digging a hole, right? And so Ursula paints for the first time in years after meeting Kiki, because she finds, you know, inspiration in seeing Kiki as this, like, young person who is just full of life and passion, and that reinvigorates something in Ursula. I guess, sorry, I'm ranting.
You're not. I'm fascinated. I am.
The TLDR is, like, Gigi is symbolic. When she's no longer able to hear Gigi, it's kind of like she's found this network and made these friends, and for the first time she's kind of, excuse the pun, flying on her own, for lack of a better word. And with that, with all of these things, you know, she furnishes her apartment, she goes grocery shopping and household shopping for the first time, she starts a business and working and earning a paycheck, right?
Yeah.
With all of that, she loses that childhood character or that childhood innocence of, like, having an imaginary friend. And you don't get that back.
I feel like you've just really blown it wide open for me, because this just felt like a series of things that happened and I didn't see any of that. When I tell you I saw none of that. But you're absolutely right. Like, as you were describing it, I was like, oh, that is what they were trying to do. I think the thing I'm trying to reconcile right now is, did the fact that this is a Studio Ghibli film work against my understanding of the film? Because I'm used to them just tearing me from the inside out and destroying me emotionally and forcing me to have emotions that I'm not used to having, or seeing perspectives that I'm not used to having. And this one was just so soft and gentle that I didn't actually see any of that. I kind of think right now, if it hadn't been presented to me as a Studio Ghibli film, I would have been able to pick up on it, but I kept waiting for, like, the fucking dragon to appear. You know what I mean? I kept waiting for, like, a mild bloodletting.
I mean, we didn't get a dragon or a bloodletting. We did get a blimp that almost, like, destroyed the city.
Yeah, but even then, there was no, like, carnage. It was, like, Man of Steel level, like, we assume people are injured, but you don't see it kind of thing. It was, I was expecting that. You know, they kept saying, it's not going to explode. It's not going to explode. So, like, the stakes kept getting lower and lower, right? And then it, like, hits the clock tower. And the guy who's living in the clock tower, apparently, he's fine the whole time. We see him. He's not even freaking out. He's fine. So I don't want to say, like, it's a shame. I kind of want to see the movie you saw. I kind of want to look at it again and be like, oh, is that what they were trying to tell me? Because I didn't see any of that. None of that.
It is a really slow, like, it's a slow burn, for sure.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's a series of things that happen to Kiki, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of what life is, right?
That's kind of
like what, quote-unquote, becoming an adult is. It's 100%. A series of things that happen to you until at one point that you don't realize when it's happened, you've gone from being, like, a child to a teenager to an adult, and there's not a hard line.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely... No, as you were going through it and, like, walking me through it, I was like, yeah, this is a very good representation, actually, of what that kind of awareness begets, you know, like, what kind of person you become. It is not always a dragon, you know, for lack of a better symbol right now. It's not always a big bad. It's not always, sometimes these things just happen slowly and through context and change and growth, and it's beautiful and it's painful and it takes a lot of growing up, and it's a wonderful thing. But, like, when I tell you I did not see none of that.
That's okay.
And I have grown up. You know, maybe that's the nub there, Kelly. I've never actually grown up, and so I couldn't recognize it for what it was.
You heard it here first, folks. Marika, still a child.
Still a child, exactly. Okay. I had a great time during this movie. I just have one really big bone to pick.
Okay.
And my bone was, okay, so this is a world, like we said before, with witches. We don't really understand what other supernatural elements would exist within this world. That's okay. That's not my problem. maybe there's only witches. I'm also okay with that. We only encounter two other witches in the film. We encounter Kiki's mother and I guess like a flyby, like somebody who just happens to be on the same route as she is when yeah. she leaves the town.
Super, super early in the movie, like the night she leaves home to, you know, go start her essentially walkabout.
Yeah.
It is a witch walkabout.
Yeah.
And I'm totally okay with oh, that.
On board, you know, at 13, witches leave home. They go and insert themselves into a new town, not hidden, very, you know, there. And they provide a service to the town that did not exist there before. So Kiki's mom, we see her. She's
got like an apothecary kind of.
Yeah, it's got like a natural chemist apothecary kind of vibe. She's working with vials, but she's clearly making potions and she's helping people in the village with like rheumatisms and pains. And so that's really clear that like, okay, so she's like a potion maker. And then Kiki meets her other flyby.
Yeah, so she's on her way to start her journey and the girl she meets is on her way home after finishing.
Exactly.
So it's almost like a foil, sort of like what Kiki could be at the end of this year.
Exactly. And she explains to Kiki that her particular niche or her plus one or whatever is she's become a fortune teller, specializing in love fortune telling has been the most lucrative for her. So it's established that like every witch has their own talent and that every witch is to a certain extent like monetizing this service to the town, but is a benevolent force within this, you know, city. And Kiki, I mean, spoiler for everyone, because we all knew eventually the name of the movie is Kiki's Delivery Service. So we figured she'd become like a delivery person. So she becomes, because of her flying skills on the broom, she becomes someone who delivers packages. But she has no particular talent for flying mm-hmm. or getting there faster yeah. or, you know, this is a very, the whole world is a very post-war Europe generic environment, right? It's all cobblestones on a hillside. It could be France. It could be Italy. It could be pretty much anywhere post-war Europe. So it's analog. So like she's using maps to find her way. It's not like she doesn't need a map to find a location. There's nothing special about Kiki's particular talent here.
I mean, arguably, she's not a very good delivery person.
She's not a great delivery.
She loses the toy cat from That's her right. first delivery and then has to sneak it into the person's house after finding it in the forest. It's how she meets Ursula.
But yeah.
Like, that's not a hallmark delivery gone successfully.
Exactly. And it seems like every witch can fly. I mean, her mother gives her flying broom. The other witch she meets is also flying and flying very well. So I got really confused, like, if I think that's why I didn't see, like, the growing up kind of analogy, because it's not like she becomes, like, an expert flyer. It's something you said pre-recording. There's no Quidditch moment in this film. She's actually kind of a terrible flyer through most of the film. And so I kind of didn't see what her special uniqueness is. And that was, like, my main bone to pick. But also, I didn't see her special uniqueness from the standpoint of even her personality or her character. And that's harsh. And I get it. But she seems to be a very pleasant young woman who doesn't have any particular uniqueness about her. Am I wrong? Am I being mean, Kelly?
It's a little mean, but it's also a little true.
Right?
You know? She's very charismatic and personable.
Yes.
Hard
worker.
Very hard worker. I guess you could say that is like a personality trait.
Mm-hmm. Endearing, generous, kind-spirited, yeah. well-spoken, tidy. I mean, it's not
polite.
Polite. It's not to say she has no endearing qualities or that she isn't a good person, but at no point did she ever become unique. And given that they'd already established that the other two witches are, and then this is all we have to base our information about witchdom on here, they have a unique talent. That's kind of how I felt about the movie in general, where I was like, this is all well and good, but I don't know what makes Kiki particularly special.
I mean, I guess we're assuming that both the mother and the other witch that you meet had a particular talent in, like, fortune telling or, you know, potion making. But maybe they didn't. Like,
the thing that tips me off to that is that the old woman who's visiting Kiki's mother at the very, very top of the movie says, this is the only thing that's ever helped my insert injury or illness here. I can't remember what it was. She says, this is the only thing that's ever helped me. And I was like, okay, so you have a particular talent for at least for some form of healing.
Yeah, but she's also been doing it presumably since she was 13, right?
And then...
So is that a talent that comes with time?
Maybe. But in the scope of the movie, I would have expected a slightly better flying skill or location skill or just anything that makes her unique. You know, it could have been as simple as she's so personable and she's so charismatic that she takes delivering good news, bad news, objects, whatever. She just does it so well that no one else could do it. It just, again, there's nothing in this movie that I'm like, that's awful. I don't like it. Can't get on board. It was one of the only thoughts I had because the amount of notes I took for this film are, like, nothing. I have a grocery list right now that's longer than the notes that I took for this film, where I was like, it's whimsical, but it's not interesting. I don't feel attached to Kiki in any way. I don't want to learn more about Kiki. Again, not because she's not a nice person, but it's like, it was like, you know what it was like? It was like meeting someone at a dinner party, and you had a perfectly serviceable conversation, but you're not gonna, like... And the next time you bump into them in the street, you'll be delighted to see them again. But you'll never suggest going to get a cup of coffee or do any kind of activity with them after. There's nothing wrong with them. They're perfectly lovely and you hope you wish them well. But I don't want to like learn more about you. Like, I'm okay.
No,
I'm
that's good. Fair. I think that's totally fair. I felt like we learned more personality-wise about Tombo.
Yes.
I felt way more drawn in terms of like being a fully fleshed out 13-year-old as much as a 13-year-old can be with him, because he had motivations, desires, hobbies, whole journey of like friendship and possibly romantic interest, and
he was a real go-getter, let's put it that way. He built that propeller bike thing. He seemed to have an understanding of like engineering, or at least an interest in it. And again, that's just kind of something I didn't really see in Kiki.
Fair enough.
I mean, I feel like it's gonna be a real short episode today.
That's okay. You know what, not every Ghibli movie needs to rip our hearts out.
That's right. I don't have to cry.
It's not sustainable.
At no point in time did I feel like crying. Did I feel like holding my children closer? It was a great time. Like, look, rewatch Re-Steep. I'm never going to rewatch this movie. If it happens to be on, I won't turn it off. Should people see this movie? Yeah, sure. Why not? Well, a rainy Sunday afternoon where you just want to see a fun, non-invasive, beautiful to watch, just visually stunning thing to watch. Yeah, sure. Why not? Watch Kiki's Delivery
That's
Service.
That's so funny. What? In our outline for my Re-Stock Re-Steep, I kind of said similar, where like I'm not going to like actively go out of my way to like really watch and sit down with it. But it's good ambiance, like, movie or background movie for, like, a rainy day when you're at home and you can't go out. And so you're just, like, cozy up with, like, a cup of tea and, you know, in a big pile of blankets.
I will say that this movie paired with tea is absolute fucking perfection. There are some things in this world, I think sometimes, like, I mean, the theme of our podcast is obviously pairing tea with, you know, media of some type. But sometimes we really shoehorn it in. You know, sometimes I'd rather have a glass of wine or have a scotch or a bowl of popcorn and Coke. You know, some movies are just better acclimated to that. if there was a movie that was begging for a fucking cup of tea, it is this movie.
I mean, they serve tea in the movie.
They serve tea in the movie, but just, it just, I don't know, it fits with that kind of North American perception that tea is like this calming, cozy, tea time kind of vibe, you know? Yeah. Whereas, like, we clearly would drink tea with anything at any time, and we don't feel like it's necessarily relegated to that feeling, but good God, this movie is, like, emblematic of make yourself a cup of tea, get some blankets on a rainy day, and watch. Saying that, how'd you pair this?
So, I think there were a lot of ways that I could have taken this. Mm-hmm. And I would have probably been happy with all of them. Mm-hmm. But the thing I ended up doing, because I did remember the bakery so vividly over, like, almost anything else, that I was so sure in my head it was going to be, like, a central pillar of the movie. And it kind of is.
Okay.
I mean, Kiki lives at the bakery, so it's...
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely not insignificant. But I picked a tea from Almost Tea called Egg Custard Tart.
Oh, nice. Well done.
It's a chamomile-based tea. Chamomile's not really my favorite thing, but it's got a really nice, like, vanilla custard. Not, it doesn't taste eggy, but it definitely tastes, like, creamy with that, like, slight burnt sugar type of note. And I thought that was a really nice nod to the bakery, but it's also a very, like, Asian-style pastry. This one in particular, the tea is inspired by, like, Taiwanese egg tarts. It just felt like a really good homage and nod to, you know, the genre, the studio, while still being thematically kind of linked to the movie.
That is a beautiful pairing. That is beautiful, because... Okay, so let me unpack it just a little bit, right? I feel like the flavor pairing is light and sweet without having tasted it, but a very light, airy sweetness that fits with the type of theme of the film very, very well. Then egg tart, that is the dessert bridge between Europe and Asia. That is, like, where those two cultures connect on desserts and pastries. And that's kind of where the list ends. Everything else after that just kind of diverges very, very strongly. So I think because, you know, it's a Japanese movie set in the kind of pan-European post-war town, beautiful pairing. The chamomile rainy day situation, let me tell you, that's pretty on point. You should be very proud of that one. Who made this tea, sorry?
Almost Tea. Okay. So they're a relatively new company. I think they've existed about 8 months now. Like, they're less than a year old. They're a subscription service. And each month is themed around some different type of dessert.
Okay.
So this one came from one of the more recent month boxes, which was all Taiwanese sweets.
Ooh.
So it was egg custard tart, candied hawthorn, black sesame bao, citrus jelly, and others that I'm forgetting. Mango shaved ice, and a sixth one that I cannot remember.
That sounds so cool.
The teas are very, very simple. They're all tea bags, so you can get, there's like a little month where you get like two of each flavor, and then a big one where you get four. I always go little because I don't need a million tea bags around the house. I just
right.
really taste everything.
Right.
It's super, super simple. It's usually a base, maybe one or two other ingredients, and then flavoring. And the quality has ranged, you know, to be like super transparent. Definitely not every tea is a winner.
Okay.
But I haven't had anything that is like super, super vile.
Right.
And though I haven't had, like, a lot of, like, oh my god, I need this in my life moments, everything has felt appropriate for, like, the inspirations.
This just sounds like such a fun, like, discovery box, too. Because if they're going, like, with something as specific as Taiwanese sweets, that's a really specific area of the world. And all the flavors you enumerated were like, yeah, that's pretty on point with that area. I think that's really cool.
So they've had, their first box was all themed around like different kinds of like brownies.
Okay.
So they had like caramel fudge brownie, double chocolate chunk, brown butter, like blondie was one, or brown butter. Anyway, some brown butter something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a blondie, but in that vein. And then they had a cupcake one that was a lot more like, the range was a lot more fruity, less chocolatey.
Mm-hmm.
What else have they done? They did one that was all inspired by generational recipes passed by their staff members.
No way.
So that was really cool. They had like a traditional gingerbread in there, a crostata inspired blend. And in the month, you got like a little like couple paragraphs from each staff member of, this is why I picked this recipe. This is like how it's made. And that was really cool.
That's so cool. That's
even
so...
if it's a lie, it's cool.
Oh, who cares? It's from the, it's such an interesting way of grouping them together, of giving that emotion to those blends. I want a subscription from them now. That sounds so awesome. This is not a paid advertisement, by the way.
No, I
haven't heard you mention it before. And I think it's probably because, we don't tell each other everything, but, B, also if it's tea bags, it's not something you can necessarily like share readily. Right. I feel like a lot of the times when you have a tea bag tea, I don't hear about it. Not because you don't want to tell me about it, but because there's really no way for me to try it.
Truly. I think my favorite month, actually the Taiwanese month is probably my favorite month. The second would be one that was all themed around breakfast foods.
Ooh.
That one was really, really good.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'm going to have to look them up after this. And now I have to tell you about my pairing, which was not nearly as interesting. There's no real... It was like a typical Marika thing where I just like stood in front of everything I had and I was like, oh, what am I going to drink with this? Look, it worked. It worked. I'll start off by saying that it worked. The decision-making process that went into it was stupid simple. Which I was like, okay, what am I watching? Kiki's Delivery Service. So I paired it with Vicky's Sponge Cake.
I love that. Were you pleasantly surprised to see a bakery?
I was so happy when I saw a bakery. So I did Bird and Blend's Vicky's Sponge Cake, which I think is a tea I've paired with something before. It's a tea that I really, really like for like the little raspberry notes in it. And yeah, when I saw the bakery show up, I was like, well, I know what I'm doing, even though I clearly have no idea what I'm doing. But I just like the idea of like Kiki's Delivery Service with Vicky's Sponge Cake.
I love that.
I like saying it together.
No, it sounds great. But also, like, that tea tastes wonderful. It is a really good match in that it's light and decadent, but kind of airy and, you know, just fruity enough.
Yeah, slightly whimsical.
And, I mean, bakery aside, cake delivery is very much a thing.
Mm-hmm. 100%. She delivers a cake. Everything, she does. Everything happens. It worked out. I highly recommend it. It was a great pairing. It was one of my proudest moments when I was kind of like, I'm enjoying this cup with this film. I think it's holding really, really well all the way out. I wouldn't have altered it or changed it. I couldn't think of, because I finished the cup halfway through the film and then I made myself another of the same. And that was fun because it wasn't like halfway through. I was like, oh, see, I'd actually change that. I was like, nah, I stuck with it. It was like, it works. It works. So it was a lot of fun. So yeah, Kiki's Delivery Service. Wonderful time, good pairings, watch it with friends, watch it alone. I don't really care. I'm probably going to forget everything about this movie as soon as we stop the recording.
That's okay. Honestly, I think it's nice that we found a Ghibli movie that's not leaving you with trauma.
That's true. I can just walk out of here feeling airy and light and ready for the world.
That in itself is a win.
It's a win. Unlike next week's geek.
Next week, I'm trying to think of, like, the best way to describe this, but it's my fandom. I'm really excited for it. It's something I've wanted to find a way to incorporate into the podcast since season one, and I think I'm going to describe it the way that it was pitched to me when I first started reading it, which is, if Romeo and Juliet was in the Star Wars universe.
I accept your teaser. Very well done. Thank you very much. That being said,
you can find us on Instagram at Geeksteep. Hit us up in our DMs. You know, season 4 will inevitably include another Ghibli movie because I just think it's the best tradition we've created on the podcast.
Yeah, no shade to Buffy, Star Trek, or Spider-Man, but honestly, it's been the best ride so far.
So with that in mind, let us know if there's a particular one you'd like us to cover. Otherwise, we'll do what we've been doing and just pick a random one and we'll see what we draw. But I think at this point, we've kind of hit, I feel, the three big pillars of genre that Ghibli covers, which is lighthearted whimsy, environmentalism, and trauma. So now that we've hit the big ones, you know, what do you want to see?
Yeah, what do you want us to unpack when it comes to Studio Ghibli? We'll take any recommendations. And with that, I wish everyone has a lovely 2 weeks.
We will see you then.
Bye.